Mr. Milius?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Hi. Who's with you up there, Dick?
I have the Deputy Commissioner of DNR, Ed Fogles, and then Kerwin Krause, who's head of our Mining Property Management Section.
All right. All right.
Joanna Bales is on.
And Joanna Bales, are you on? Hold on. Joanna Bales, are you on?
Yes, I am here.
Okay, and then Ed Fogles?
Yes, I'm here.
And anybody with, who's with revenue?
Right in the back of the room.
Oh, are you going to test, you're here for questions?
For questions.
All right, why don't we take revenue first, and then we'll go to DNR. So Mr. Krause, Mr. Fogles, and Mr. Milius are all with DNR, and Ms. Bales is with revenue, but she's not present, or she is present? She's online. All right. All right. Mr. Stickle? Yeah, why don't you come forward? All right. We're going to convene the House Committee, Special Committee on Ways and Means. It's March 1st, 2006. We're continuing testimony on House Bill 418, which is a mining production and license tax royalty bill introduced by Representative Seaton. And present for now are Representative Moses and Representative Seaton and myself. Mr. Stickle, you're with the Department of Revenue. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Is it Dan Stickle?
Correct.
S-T-I-C-K-E-L? Okay. You would put down on the sign-in sheet that you are here for questions only.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Correct.
All right. Well, let's ask a general question, and then we'll open up to the committee. What does the department think about this bill and the revision of the tax provisions contained in the bill?
As far as I know, the department doesn't have an official position on the bill.
Okay.
I can't comment on the policy
the
department might have toward the bill.
What about the any fiscal impacts? Did you help prepare the fiscal note?
Could I did, yes.
Why don't we turn to the fiscal note? Make sure the committee has it. Oh, we're joined by Representative Wilson.
Well, what we did for the fiscal note...
Let me get it pulled up here. We have a fiscal note on House Bill 418. It's... undated. Here's... Is that correct?
Yeah.
Is that correct, Mr. Stickles?
Down at the bottom right-hand corner. Oh,
let's see. I have two.
This is the revenue one.
This is from prepared by Dan Stickle and Joanna Bales, Tax Division.
The one I have.
And it's undated.
Yes, that's
then there's one from Mining, Land, and Water that is dated. So your fiscal note you prepared is the undated fiscal note
yes,
we have?
That's correct.
For purposes of identifying it, why don't we just put today's date, March 1, 2006. Why don't you talk about your fiscal note?
All right. Well, and I worked on the revenue side of the fiscal note, and Joanna Bales, I believe, is online, and she can address the expenses side of the fiscal note. As far as revenues go, this bill, as written, would eliminate the existing mining license tax and replace it with a production-based tax. So there's two steps to estimating the revenue impact of the bill. The first step is to estimate the revenue that would be realized under the current tax system, and the second step is to estimate the revenue under the new tax system. And the net revenue impact of the bill is basically the difference between the two. For our mining license tax, we have an economic model internally that is based on projections for prices and production of metals at the major mines in Alaska. And our mining license tax is based on confidential internal information. Basically, what we do there is we look at the historical tax payments we've seen from each of the mines and how that relates to their mineral prices and the production at those mines. And you can see in the fiscal note, we developed two scenarios for future prices. The reason the fiscal note is indeterminate on the front is due to the difficulty in forecasting future prices for minerals. So we developed two different price scenarios. The high price scenario is based on the most recent data available in the futures market for prices of the major minerals in Alaska. And the low price scenario assumes that by the time this bill takes effect, that mineral prices will return to their historical average. For that, we use the 10-year average. And you can see on the mining license tax, looking out to 2012, under the high price scenario, we'd forecast $32.5 million in revenue from the existing tax. Under the low case scenario, we'd forecast only $8.3 million in existing tax. And that does include the addition of the Pogo and Kensington mine projects.
It does or doesn't?
It does. Those are factored into those. Pogo's producing now, and I think our assumption was that Kensington would come on sometime next year for this fiscal note. And to produce the estimates for the production tax revenues, it was we basically assumed that production at the major mines would remain relatively constant with the addition of Pogo and Kensington coming on board, and we figured value as a function of production and the forecasted price. One thing that's important to point out here is that the value we used for our fiscal note is the gross value, the net sales value of the minerals time production. We did not make adjustments in our fiscal note for the production expenses and transportation expenses that can be deducted under this bill. So the actual revenues for the production tax might be a little bit less. We did not have data available to figure out exactly how much would be deducted for that. And that's another one of the reasons that the front of the fiscal note is indeterminate. But as you can see, comparing the two, given that caveat on the production tax, the net impact of changing the tax would be a rather significant increase in total taxes from the mining industry. Looking out to 2012, under the high price scenario, it would increase revenues from the mining industry by about $45 million. Under the low price, about $39 million.
Yeah, Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question. So this box that you've got filled out for us here, is that above what we're getting now, or is that just if that was in place instead of what we have now?
The tables that we've included there, the top line on the table is the revenues that we expect to receive under the existing mining license tax, given the price scenario. And then the next line is the revenues that we would expect to receive from the new tax. And then the third line is the net change, the net impact of the bill.
Thank you.
Okay. Any further questions, Representative Seaton?
Yes, we're projecting out to 2012 here with two more large mines on. So what was the value, the gross value of the industry that you used for this purpose? I mean, we're talking about $1.6 billion of minerals this year. What was the 2012?
Sure. Just a second. I have that here. Okay, for 2012, under the high price scenario, we estimated the taxable value of the minerals industry at just over $2.5 billion. And under the low price scenario, it was just under $1.6 billion.
1.6?
Correct.
That's a pretty generous spread.
And that basically illustrates the big issue when addressing minerals taxes is what are the prices going to be.
Yeah.
We've seen a real big run-up over the last couple years, and some of the experts are saying it's going to stay high, and there's another camp that's saying it's a bubble and it's going to burst and prices are going to go back down.
Representative Seaton.
So the the current, let's see, was it $1.6 billion last year and supposed to be 1.9 for the coming year? Is that, or do you have the?
I don't have,
you don't have
an estimate for the coming year.
Okay.
And you're right at the moment.
But it was 1.6 for the last year, 2005, is that?
I believe so. Yeah, that would be.
So, and the effect of that, because it would be in the high price scenario?
For?
I mean the difference here between, basically you're saying that the current value under the under the 10-year average scenario, even with two more major mines coming online, would have approximately the same amount of revenue, as gross revenue to the state as we have now, and that's because even without those two mines, it's the high present price of minerals. Is that why those two are equivalent?
Under the mean reversion scenario, we are including the two new mines coming on under the low price scenario. So that, I'm not sure I completely understand your question.
Yeah, it's fine. I think I understand it there. Yeah.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you get for us what your predictions are without the two mines? Because then we can kind of compare what the real change is going is how it would affect us. So can you get the committee without those two new mines coming into play, and then we can see where then we've got apples and apples, and it's kind of like apples and oranges when you've included the two new mines, so that I can kind of have an idea of what the real difference is.
Yeah, that's something we can do.
Without the Kensington and
the Pogo.
In both of the scenarios we've listed on the fiscal note, the two new mines are included in both scenarios.
And so can you give us one where same thing, just where they're not included?
Sure. Yeah, we can do that.
Sure. Yeah, Representative C.
And did revenue make any estimate of of what the percentage of transportation, you know, all of the other things that are allowed as deductions under this, including the ball milling, and you know, we're working on mine mouth value, so that includes all of the preparation of an ore for shipment and the ore shipment, and all of those things would be subtracted before this value is imposed, and so I'm trying to figure out, did revenue look at what kind of percentage change that would make to values?
No, we did not have data available to make that adjustment. So that's something to keep in mind when you're looking at our estimates for the production taxes. We did not adjust for that.
Right. And Mr. Chairman, I think we had testimony the other day that mine mouth value would be much more that the mining industry would appreciate mine mouth value more than the net smelter return value, because it did allow the milling and preparation of the ore for shipment. And so what we've got here is not only not including that calculation of production of the ore for shipment, but we're not even taking out the transshipment fees and all that are also allowed. So we'll have to get back with you and see if we can give some estimate, because this doesn't give a very true picture of the difference.
All right, I'll wait for that too. Is there any data, Mr. Stickle, that shows where the tax burden on a profitability line would create significant disincentives so there wouldn't be mine development? I mean, where on the continuum of mine income is the tax burden so great that we don't have the incentives to mine?
We haven't studied that explicitly. But you can see here, just looking at the two scenarios that we've presented, that there is significantly less revenue under both types of taxes when you go to the mean reversion scenario. And especially looking at the mining license tax, which is a tax on the income of the mining companies, you can see that the difference between the high and low scenarios there is about four times as much tax, which is about four times as much income. Each mine has to make its decision for itself at what its cutoff price is, and I know that those vary significantly from mine to mine.
Is there any data that shows how much are deducted before the tax is paid, since it's a net payment on net?
That would be listed on the tax returns. I'm not sure if that's something we could release, but we could look into it.
Well, I mean a cumulative or gross basis, so aggregate basis, so that it wouldn't identify any specific entity.
We could look into that.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, Representative Seaton.
One thing that's interesting is we're back to this situation on the low price scenario or the 10-year average scenario. Is we're looking again about where we were at $1.6 billion with less than $10 million worth of return to, to the state. So we're looking at less than 1/160th of the value of the minerals being charged to the state under the current form, and we would be looking at about well, you divide up 39 into that, it would be about four times 0.6, about 2.5% under the 418. But that, again, that's not accurate because there are deductions against that before that's calculated.
Mm-hmm. Any further questions for Mr. Stickle in the fiscal note? So you'll come back with that information to the committee?
Yes.
Did you make notes on what you're going to bring back?
I did. Looks like we'll prepare these scenarios for what they would be if the Pogo and Kensington mine were not in place. And also try to get an estimate of the aggregate amount of deductions taken from gross value to get to taxable income.
Okay. And then, Representative Seaton, you said you were going to provide some additional information, too.
Yes, we'll try and get you some information on the change from the basically the gross amount to percentage of net. And I think they're going to try that as well. Revenue is going to try that as well. So
okay. We'll
look at it from two different ends.
Let's see. Can you stay there for a minute, Mr. Stickle? Ms. Bales, are you online?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman.
Why don't you pick up and explain your input on the fiscal note, please?
Okay. For the record, my name is Joanna Bales. I'm a revenue audit supervisor with the tax division. And basically, as far as my portion of this fiscal note, I took a look at just the cost that we believe revenue would incur. And just to kind of give you a little bit of background as to, you know, how we focus on programs within our office, and I know that I've testified before specifically, say, on the tobacco tax, and we asked for positions when that tax increased. Based on these revenue projections, and even if, you know, I know that Dan pointed out that on the revenue projections, these are gross amounts, we didn't reduce those high and low price scenarios by costs that could be deducted before the tax is applied. But even if we were to do that and had an average price for minerals, we would still probably be looking at a significant increase in revenues. And that would mean that we would take a closer look at those programs. And any time that you raise a tax and it becomes more expensive for businesses, there is more compliance activity that should be done by the Department of Revenue. And so based on that, we expect that we would need one additional auditor to help us audit that program and ensure compliance with the program. And so basically, I mean, that's what we've asked for as far as the expense side, is one additional auditor, and then, you know, the travel and other costs that are associated with a new position within the department.
Okay. Questions, Representative Seaton?
Yes, thank you. Did you consider at all the reduction in the number of tax returns that would be required to be filed once this bill goes into effect? Because right now, I believe that the under the mining license tax, anybody that's mining in the state is required to file a tax form, and under this scenario, anybody that has less than $10,000 of value extracted wouldn't even be required to file, and then there would be a $50,000 amount at which you wouldn't owe any taxes up through $50,000. Did that come into looking at the number of tax forms that are filed by to the state?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Seaton. I really expect that the reduction would be minimal because even with the mining license, the $40,000 net income cutoff, and even though taxpayers are required to file, they don't always file, so I don't see a significant drop because we do have, currently right now, we have 180 taxpayers filing the mining license tax return. The majority of those are royalty owners, and so I expect that even under the new mining production tax, the way that royalties are paid out, we would still have several small taxpayers filing returns that would exceed the $10,000 threshold, especially if you're talking the value of the mineral versus net income.
Okay, so follow up, Mr. Chairman, I understand that we have a requirement right now that a lot of people file taxes that just aren't complying with that, and since the amount is minimal, we're just not enforcing that at the current time.
Representative Seaton, through the chair, that would be true because we do get the royalty information from the large companies when they pay those royalties, and so we can compile lists to know whether or not someone had a tax liability. And we don't spend our resources to have someone file a return when there is no tax liability.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sure. Any further questions of Ms. Bales? Anybody else want any information Ms. Bales hasn't covered? Well, we'll think about that, Ms. Bales, and thank you for your testimony today. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stickle. I think we're finished unless anybody else has any questions. Thank you for coming.
Thanks.
Okay, let's go up to the rock side of the witness list. We have Mr. Fogles, Mr. Fredrickson, and Mr. Milius. I think I'm going to wait for you, Dick, okay?
Okay.
And we'll start with Mr. Fogles. Mr. Fogles, could you identify who you are for the record and who you're with?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Ed Fogles. I'm currently the acting deputy commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources.
Okay. And then, Mr. Fredrickson, could you identify who you are, please?
Unfortunately, Mr. Fredrickson is not able to join us today. With me, I have Mr. Milius and then Mr. Kerwin Krause, who is the head of our property management section for the Division of Mining, Land, and Water.
All right. Let's have Mr. Krause. Mr. Krause, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Could you identify yourself for the record? I just had a couple of questions for you.
My name is Kerwin Krause, and I'm the mineral property manager for DNR.
Okay, and what does that mean? What do you do for them?
I manage the section in the Division of Mining, Land, and Water that maintains all of the mining claims and leases, as well as deal with the production, royalty, and rental.
Okay, and Mr. Fogles, if you're there, you can speak for the department. Let me just have a few questions of Mr. Krause. How would the implementation of this bill affect your job, and what would the changes be? How would it, in general, if you could comment on that?
I really haven't thought about it that much. It's possible that going to a different royalty mechanism would make the job a little bit easier, simply because we wouldn't have to conduct as many investigations and audits of the royalty returns that are filed.
Mm-hmm. What is it? What is involved when you do audits?
When we do audits right now, we actually look at the mining license tax return, because that return actually has all of the schedules for deductions against the gross value. And we also look at affidavits of annual labor that the mining industry is required to record annually. Those affidavits include information on mining activity, and sometimes they include volumes of material that are mined, the amount of time that they mine. We also then look at our field inspection information, and then we take that information and determine which royalty returns may be filed correctly and accurately, and which ones may not, and which ones we have more questions on, and the ones we have more questions on, and we follow up on those.
I see. Is all this information in the affidavits and your field inspections, is that all proprietary and confidential?
No, it's not.
And the schedules for gross value, is that all proprietary and confidential?
That information comes off the mining license tax return. So whatever the Department of Revenue has as far as proprietary waiting periods on that would apply.
Okay, could you do me a favor and send the committee here, Jenny Osterman, a copy of the documents or forms that are provided to mining companies that they have to fill out? It's always interesting to me that people pay taxes in this state, and very few individuals really know about it. And I'd like to see the forms that actually go out on tax payments. If you could provide those for the committee in this specific industry, I'd appreciate it.
Yes, we can.
And then to the extent that there's information, I don't want to embarrass any particular company, so I'm not going to specify a company. I'd like to see what kind of information goes into these affidavits and field inspection reports, so the committee has the benefit of that, because this is a pretty new area, I think, for the committee to look at. And I think we're benefited by knowing what we're talking about.
Okay, we will do that.
Okay, and then Mr. Krause, then could you, I think I might have interrupted your testimony. Could you continue, please?
Well, you basically asked how it would affect if we went to this gross production royalty methodology, but like I said, I haven't really thought about it that much to see how it would impact our workload.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Krause? Representative Seaton.
I guess I had one, and that is on coal, if we're changing royalty amounts, you know, we have some documents here in front of us that are saying 5% adjusted gross royalty on coal to the state. Information that I had was that, you know, we really haven't changed since statehood, which requires a minimum not less than 5 cents a ton. You know, there's no adjustment for inflation or anything else. So, I mean, I think we're probably talking about way less than a penny a ton. Does the state negotiate any coal deals that are based on the minimums, or do we negotiate a royalties based on percent of gross, similar to what we're talking about in here on coal?
Well, the coal regulations currently have coal regulations that have set the coal royalty at 5% of gross, and those regulations state that the commissioner can adjust the coal royalty every 10 years, at a minimum of every 10 years. That 5% adjusted gross value has been in existence since 1982, I believe.
Okay.
Well, how does that compare, his testimony compare with what your statement was, Representative Seaton?
Well, it's quite different than what I see in the statutory requirements. So if we're getting 5% gross royalty on coal, that's if that's what the commissioner or the department has as a standard.
What statute is that, Mr. Krause?
Well, the statute for coal is 3805150, And that statute has not been amended, I don't believe, since the territorial legislature enacted it.
Okay. Further questions of Mr. Krause?
I guess, you know, looking at that statute, 150D1, it says, shall pay to the state royalties specified in the lease. The royalties shall be fixed before offering the lease, shall be effective for a period of not more than, I think it was 20 years that I had here. The royalty shall not be less than 5 cents per ton of 2,000 pounds. And the royalty payment is subject to an expiration incentive credit. So are you saying that that portion of the statute is no longer correct, and that now we have something else that deals at 5% gross royalty?
That is correct.
Okay.
Okay, well, and the authority for that is that it's still in one section 150?
Under section 150 and also 020 and 035, I believe.
All right. Any further questions? All right. Thank you for your testimony. I look forward to getting that information.
Okay.
Thank you, sir. Commissioner Fogels, Deputy Commissioner Fogels, does the department have a position on 418, Hospital 418?
Mr. Chairman, no, the department does not have a position on House Bill 418 at this time. The department really doesn't have the expertise to really fully evaluate the implications of changing the tax structure on the mining industry.
Okay. Deputy Commissioner Fredrickson, is there any other testimony or area of your professional involvement with the mining industry that might benefit the committee through testimony, or should we turn to Mr. Milius?
Mr. Chairman, this is Deputy Commissioner Fogels. My director of the Division of Mining, Land, and Water, Dick Milius, has put together some additional information that I think would be of help to the committee in these deliberations. So if you're okay with it, I would like to allow Mr. Milius to testify.
Yeah, that's fine. I just wanted to make sure, since you had signed up as president, we wanted to make sure if you had anything to say, we gave you the benefit of that opportunity.
Okay, thank you.
You're finished, Mr. Fredrickson? I mean, Mr. Fogels, you're finished?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you, sir. Hi, Mr. Milius.
Representative Wyrock and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dick Milius. I'm the director of the DNR Division of Mining, Land, and Water. And did the committee get a handout that we had prepared that I think the first sheet says use a belly on it?
This outside?
Yeah.
Mr. Milius, we do have that, and it's also been distributed to the public.
Okay. I'll speak to that in a minute, but what I want to do is cover generally a little bit more explanation about what this bill does to kind of clarify the role of DNR versus revenue a little bit. And then I wanted to walk through those charts a little bit, and then I can address our fiscal note a bit.
Thank you, sir.
On the first topic, the main thing I wanted to point out was that for DNR, as you know, manages the state lands, and so the portion of this bill that directly affects revenues that we take in is the portion that deals with royalties. And specifically, Section 5 of the bill, which changes how the royalties are calculated from the current net income to a gross value at point of production. Royalties only apply, under state law, only apply to state lands, and this specific section only deals with the locatable minerals, so it doesn't deal with coal or sand and gravel. So in terms of what this bill impacts at DNR and on state land, it's only royalties on metals that are mined on state land. An important consideration regarding that is that there is currently not a lot of mining large mine projects on state land. that are paying royalty because there simply aren't a lot of large projects on state land. The only major mineral development that's on state land is Yuza Valley, which is coal, as I mentioned, which isn't affected by this, and then Fort Knox, which is actually mental health trust land, so the revenues from that actually largely don't go to DNR. They go to the mental health trust. Pogo is the first large mine project that that's going to be paying a large, fairly significant royalty to the state. And Pogo, as you know, I think they just poured their first gold bar about a week or two ago. And so we haven't received any significant royalties from Pogo yet. So when we talk about royalties on state land, there haven't been a lot simply because there hasn't been a lot of projects. Some of the upcoming projects are also not on state land. The exception is the Pebble project is entirely on state land. But Donlin Creek is not state land, nor is Kensington, which are two other kind of projects that look like they're coming down the road. So when we're talking about state lands and DNR, our role in this whole bill is primarily on the royalties part. The taxes, which are dealt with in Section 12 primarily of the bill, and that's changed, that's all addressed through revenue, and the taxes do apply to all mining development, and that provision applies to all all mineral resources, including coal and sand and gravel. So the changes that this bill makes to royalties, like I say, are fairly narrowly focused. The changes to the taxes are much broader, but I think those have already been addressed by revenues. The charts we handed out, there's the first five are charts of the individual mining projects, the large mining projects that already exist in Alaska and are paying either taxes or revenue or property taxes. And on Monday's hearing, there were a lot of questions about those projects, and so that's why we put these together. And the reason we picked these five projects is that these are generally the projects that are referred to as large mines. There's dozens of smaller operators, primarily placer operations on state and federal lands, but all added together, they don't yield a significant amount of either revenues, royalties, or taxes to the state. So it's these big projects are the ones that really generate significant revenues. And as I mentioned, only one of these existing projects is actually on state land. And I'll briefly walk you through the charts. The first one is Yuza Valley, at least assuming that they were handed given to you in the same order that I have them. And Yuza Valley is on state land. It is a coal project, so it's the royalty change in the affects what revenues the state would get from Yuza Valley in terms of royalties. It would affect the taxes. If you look down there, we've got under payments to the state, we talk about which payments the state currently gets. These are just for a sample year, so it's these rates, depending on how much production is coming out of the pits up there, and in the case of like the railroad, which, you know, where they're shipping it to, the revenues that the state gets changes somewhat every year, but this gives you an idea of the types of revenues the state is getting and also the types of revenues the borough is getting off of the Yuza Valley property. The next one is Red Dog. Red Dog is owned, the land is entirely owned by Nana Regional Corporation, so there's no royalties coming to the state. The royalties from Red Dog all go to Nana, and that's been since its inception, which is in the at some point in the 1989, I guess, when they started production.
Mr. Milius?
Pardon?
I have a question.
Yes.
Can we pause and go talk about the Yuza Valley chart?
Okay.
So the payments, this is if you would total up all these payments, this is total government take. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
Okay, and this is all in for 2004, is that correct?
That is correct.
And so the income tax is it says 9.4% net profit of Alaska portion of federal tax. Could you define that a little bit more?
Mr. Chairman, it's pretty, the income tax, actually the Department of Revenue may be better at explaining what our actual, the income tax, how that's calculated for a property like Yuza Valley.
All right, we'll wait. Mr. Stickle, are you the guy to talk to about that? All right, why don't you come forward, Mr. Stickle. Just so we keep our train of thought here, Mr. Milius, I just want to finish one chart before we move to the next.
Okay.
Thank you, sir. Do you have the chart?
Mr. I do.
Stickle, if you'd identify yourself for the record and address the income tax portion of this chart.
All right. For the record, my name is Dan Stickle, economist with the Department of Revenue. Mr. Chairman, the income tax, any company that does business, a corporation that does business in Alaska is required to file a corporate income tax return with the tax division. If the corporation is an S corporation, they're generally exempt from the corporate income tax. That's something to keep in mind. The 9.4% listed here is the maximum tax rate. It is a graduated tax rate from one, beginning at 1% up to 9.4%. The 9.4% tax rate, I believe, applies to income above $90,000.
So it's graduated according to income?
It is graduated according to income, correct.
And 9.4% is the maximum?
That's the maximum tax rate that applies to income over $90,000.
All right.
And basically, when a company files their Alaska tax return, it's based on their federal taxable income and a three-piece apportionment factor based on property and payroll and sales. So there's an equally weighted apportionment, and between the three of those, they define their net apportionment factor to apportion their federal income to Alaska income.
So it's a fairly simple form.
It can be simple, it can be complex. And as far as the actual income taxes paid by specific corporations, that's something that we're not allowed to release. But all of these companies, as long as they're organized as a C corporation, would be required to file an income tax return with us.
So we would know, since on these charts, just looking at these charts, Usabelli, Red Dog, Greens Creek, Fort Knox, Pogo are all paying 9.4%.
That would be the maximum tax rate as long as they're registered as a C corporation.
And the amount of income tax to the state, though, could fluctuate wildly. We can only get that on an aggregate basis for these four.
Correct. And I don't have the sheet with me here, but I do have some statistics on the total tax liability for the mining industry.
Okay. Could you provide that to the committee?
Sure, I'd be happy to.
Thank you. Add that to your list. Thank you. I would be interested to know if the department keeps any data or analyses or studies on the econometrics of mining. I mean, where is it that the tax burden becomes so onerous that it is a disincentive to investment and exploration?
That's not something that we've looked at explicitly.
All right.
We can try to look into that.
Any questions on this discussion, Representative Seaton?
Well, no, I just wanted to point out that on the table three that we had presented to you earlier,
let's define that.
Okay. It's the page 10 out of the Legislative Research Services report, 05.253 of June 2005. And table three is state revenue collected through major taxes and fees on oil, gas, mining, and fishing industries, 95 through 2004. And you have that in your package. Mm-hmm. And you'll see in that middle section, which deals with mining, it does list the corporate income taxes ranging from, $18,000 in 2002 to $323,000 in 2004. And 2001 was $285,000. So it's highly variable.
Mr. Stickle, why don't you look at that chart that we've referenced? If you don't have it, you can get it from the committee and compare it to your data and see if it matches.
Okay, yes, I believe we've looked at that, and I believe that does match our internal data. I believe we provided that for the legislative research report.
Hopefully it matches. All right. Thank you, Mr. Stickle. You might as well stay here.
All right.
Mr. Miles, I'm sorry to interrupt. Mr. Miles, just a sec. We have Representative Seaton has another question. I'm sorry.
So, still dealing with...
I didn't get a chance to read that.
Still dealing with coal. I just want to figure out. We're looking at the statute book here for 2004 statutes, and it's under 3805150 under royalties. It says, shall pay the state royalties specified in the lease. The royalty shall be fixed before offering the lease and shall be effective for a period of not more than 20 years. The royalty shall be not less than 5 cents a ton of 2,000 pounds, and a royal payment is subject to exploration incentive credited in AS 2730. So I just want to get clarification. So the state then, DNR, negotiated with Usabelli for a 5% of gross royalty on coal. Is that correct? Instead of and that the 5 cents per ton is simply a minimum amount that they could have negotiated?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, this is Kerwin Krause with the Division of Mining, Land, and Water. The 5 cents a ton in the statute was the original royalty amount that was placed in the statute when it was enacted. And then in 1982, actually before 1982, there were regulations that were implemented to change some of the stuff in the statute. One of those regulations had to do with royalty, another one with rent. And so in 1982, the royalty was changed from 5 cents a ton and then the other amounts that were indicated in there up to 5% of gross. In addition to that, any leases that were in production in 1982 on the particular month that the regulations went into effect were allowed to deduct transportation and beneficiation costs, and there were only three leases in production at that time, and they belonged to Usabelli, and they're still operating on those leases. And at the same time, rent was changed to $3 an acre. And since that time, that rent and royalty amount has remained in effect, and it's in regulation.
Representative Seaton.
Yeah, and are there any similar regulations that deal with minerals that are modifying or putting minimums in the statute?
We have the same. It's the same kind of structure. We have the initial rental and royalty amount, or at least for rental, we have the initial rental amounts implemented by the legislature and statute. And we have the updated rentals in regulation. Those are adjusted every 10 years according to the consumer price index change. And those are in regulation.
Okay, and can you forward those to us as well, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah. Hey, Mr. Krause, can you do that?
Yes, we can.
Okay, this might be a convenient place to break. What we're going to do is the committee's meeting on Friday is canceled because we're going to do budget closeout. So next Monday, if Mr. Stickle, if you could come back. Mr. Milius, if you could come back Monday. Mr. Fredrickson, if he's available, if he could come in so we could just ask him some questions. And Mr. Krause, if you could be here on Monday too. And we'll pick up on the usability chart, make sure there's no further questions on that, and then go on to the rest of the chart here, Mr. Milius, okay?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we will do that.
And then if there's any way you could get these down to the committee, or maybe the committee can expand them, we can put them on the wall here, committee staff, so the camera could focus on that so the public knows, has a little bit easier time following it. Any questions by the committee? Is that okay? All right. Thank you for coming. We're adjourned.
What are you saying on the fishing game?
No. We're just not. We're